Let's Get Two presents...
5, 4, 3, 2, 1...
Go, go, Astro! Here come the Astros, burning with desire. Here come the Astros, breathing orange fire. Here come the Astros, with winning on their mind. Here come the Astros, number one every time. Go, go, Astros.
We want Houston! We want Houston!
Alvarez, it's a high drive center field. Veerling's back. This game is turned upside down.
And the pitch is lifted to right by Castellanos. Long run for Tucker over toward the line and foul territory. Makes the catch and the Houston Astros do it again! 2022 World Series champions!
And now, Go Go Astros! Astros baseball from three guys who've been there since Art Howe had hair.
And welcome back to Go Go Astros, the show that, well, maybe our content is not great, but at least most of us on the show, or all of us on this show, understand how to light. And so if you're one of those Astros podcasts out there and it looks like you're shooting in a cave, hit me up. I can help you out. But gentlemen, Brian's back. Andy is back at back. One of the more exciting days in regular season history for the Astros. We'll start with Justin Verlander becoming an Astro again. And because Brian was not live with us yesterday, we will start with Brian's large brushstroke opinion on what it's like to get Mr. Upton back.
Hey, the last time we traded for Justin Verlander in a regular season, we won the World Series. So if the pattern holds, we're pretty good, right?
Yeah.
You know, and there's a clear similarity to 2017 in that the pitching staff was a clear area of need. And so, you know, something we've talked about here, I've talked about other places, is the Astros really could use a pitcher who could start in the playoffs and to add to their rotation, and they certainly found it. The issue is Justin Verlander has not been as good this year as he was the last two full seasons we've seen him as in an Astros uniform. And so, hey, the best case scenario is this is like 2017. We're coming to the Astros rejuvenates him. They're able to make some adjustments that his other team couldn't make. And he has a great end of the season and helps us at least win the American League Championship Series. The more sort of realistic scenario is he's a good but not great pitcher at this age. But a good but not great pitcher is something the Astros really need to A, help reel in the Rangers, and B, because, again, they'll need someone to start in the playoffs.
Andy, after having slept on the trade, thoughts, opinions?
Well, actually, I had a question for Brian because he is the quote-unquote numbers guy. And that's not snarky, by the way. Sorry if it came across that way. Isn't there a pretty clear line of demarcation from about June 1st on where Verlander is a much better pitcher than Verlander was from April to May 31st?
I know the answer because I read his Substack.
One, thank you for reading, James. And two, yes. And so there are a couple ways to sort of look at this here. One is his, you know, like I think he was second in the majors in OPS allowed, third in batting average allowed in the month of July. Obviously not the biggest, you know, not the biggest sample, but an encouraging one that he's an improving player. And his strikeout rate has gone up. The bad news is the strikeout rate's gone up to like 26%, which is pretty close to league average. Mm-hmm. In his time with the Astros, his strikeout rate was 33%.
I'm wondering.
Not a Cy Young word, but hey, average strikeout and really suppressing contact is a really valuable skill.
Yeah, I am wondering, as it plays out the rest of the season, how much the Astros approach helps Justin Verlander versus whatever the Mets were doing. I think that's a thing that it's hard to quantify yet. I'm also kind of wondering how much being on a team where you have a chance to actually win something helps Justin Verlander just focus a little bit more than maybe he has, you know, pitching in Citi Field this year. But I think that's all that's to be seen, I guess.
I think that's a great point, though, Andy, because it seems like from if you take Scherzer's interview and some of the comments Verlander made before the trade, it does seem like there were questions around that team for a long time. And as we all know, if you're worried about like what the future is going to be like or this or that thing, you're not really concentrating on your job at hand. Again, I know we can't quantify it, but it seems like he leapt at the chance to come back here. I wonder how much being someplace that's comfortable. Apparently, there was a massive text chain going on amongst the players last night of everybody being fired up. I wonder how much of that will also play a role in his performance.
I'll push back a little on that, which is mostly to say, hey, the Mets' goal this season, walking into this season, and really until about July 1st, was, hey, we're going to go win the World Series. We won 100 wins last year, and we signed, you know, Justin Verlander to go with Max Scherzer, to go with all these, you know, high-level players, and it didn't work. And it is probably a less comfortable environment when you have, let's face it, a bunch of high-paid baseball players have high opinions of themselves and have pretty high egos. So that, you know, probably I can get why that's not the best clubhouse to be in at the moment, which isn't anybody's a bad person. It's just kind of like, it's not working out. And obviously, look, Verlander had a no trade clause. He chose the Astros as much as the Astros chose Verlander. And frankly, the Mets probably tried to persuade him to go to the Dodgers or the Orioles, who could offer him potentially better trade packages. They did get a lot out of the Astros, but, you know, Verlander chose the Astros. So yeah, the fact that he's real comfortable with the guys, the fact that, you know, we can question how big the value of throwing to Martin Maldonado is as a empirical matter, but as a, I like throwing to, Martin Maldonado and I put qualitative value on that. It's pretty clear from a lot of our pitchers.
Andy, do you have a follow-up to that?
No, I agree with Brian on a lot of what was in the Substack this morning in regards to Verlander. I also think just the reality of who Justin Verlander is at nearly 41 years old is he's not a high strikeout guy anymore. But I don't think he needs to be for him this to be a successful transaction for the Astros. I think he needs to be very similar to what he was towards the end of last year, a guy that's going to consistently give you 6 to 7 innings, save the bullpen, doesn't have to dominate, but needs to keep you in games. He's not a number one anymore in most rotations, but he's a solid number two in today's Major League Baseball, and we need one of those because we don't have one right now. So he fills a need. He's got experience with the team. I think the Astros coaching staff understands how to get the best out of Justin Verlander. And Justin, when he was here, demonstrated that he will listen to them when they have something to say. I don't know that that was always the case in New York. I don't know that it wasn't either, but I do know there's a familiarity and comfort with Josh Miller and crew about what's going to happen when Justin Verlander takes the mound this weekend in Yankee Stadium.
Wow. I can't believe it's in what a great place to start. He doesn't even have to move for a while. He can just hop on over. You know, one of the things that you talked about, Brian, in the Substack and Andy and I talked about it yesterday. There is this concept among the more reactionary of our fans that the Astros, quote unquote, got fleeced. I don't know that you can ever answer that question until 2 to 3 years into the major league careers of the players traded. But you did say the Astros essentially faced a choice, 23 and 24 or beyond 25 or 25 and beyond. To me, the obvious choice is you know what you have in 23 and 24. That's the choice you make. The Astros are not a rebuilding team. They have the opportunity to go for a championship. Now I am of the opinion that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush and all those other cliches. Andy, first to you, Brian's broke that down in the Substack. I mean, is that where you're at as a fan? Would you rather be chasing championships in 23 and 24 or chasing championships in 25, which doesn't mean we're not going to also, as you point out in the Substack, Brian?
I mean, for me, it's the devil you know right now. Drew Gilbert could be a Hall of Fame player. He could be Jared Kelenic. And anything in between those two extremes is realistic for a guy who has not played a major league game yet.
A comparison to A.J. Reed and Francis Martez was left on the cutting room floor.
Oh, you, how could you not talk about Frankie Tuesday? Frankie Tuesday.
Come on, man, yeah.
He was the other one. You know, yesterday we were talking about guys that Lunau projected as untouchable. Francis Martez was an untouchable guy. And most Astros fans sitting here watching this will not be able to tell you who he was because he had basically a season in the major leagues and then a PED suspension and a Tommy John surgery and a whole host of other bad luck and never heard from again. And the odds are that's what happens to most minor league players. Something derails them before they get to fulfill their potential. Now, you've given the Mets two really high-ceiling type players, but there's a lot that especially Ryan Clifford has to develop before he gets there. Drew Gilbert's more of an immediate fix, and I fully expect you to see him in Citi Field playing for the Mets next year at some point, but there's no guarantee he's going to be immediately successful or long-term successful. What we do have now is a chance to win a World Series or at least get to the World Series because we fortified our rotation. And we fortified our rotation for this year and for next year and for possibly 25. That's a big deal.
Yeah, Brian, before you respond to that too, Dana Brown actually, who I think has done a pretty good job as the GM of being transparent, said that Drew Gilbert projects to be a slightly above average major leaguer. He doesn't project to be Bryce Harper or Mike Trout or whoever. So again, you posited in your Substack that essentially, for the lack of a better term, the Astros had two choices. They chose 23-24. Is that the choice you want them to make as a fan? And I guess expand on that.
Well, I'll sort of answer your question in a different way, which is to say they've had a chance to do something they've done the last couple of years, which is balance the present and the future. And this is the first time they've really truly gone fully and totally all in. Because you know who they didn't trade for Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole and Zach Greinke? They didn't trade Kyle Tucker. And they didn't have them say, you know, I know he's not big on your prospect list, but this Framber Valdez guy you got, we really like his curveball. So toss him into one of these deals, which thank goodness, right? Because, you know.
Right. Well, we're going to get to
missing, Valdez not missing later. Michael Perez and, you know, Josh Rojas somehow got traded to the Mariners this week. So please note that on Immaculate Grid, everyone. And it also speaks to the whole thing about sort of, hey, are the, you know, what the Astros have been able to do. Go back to the Francis Martez comment, right? One of the first things I wrote publicly when I started writing publicly about the Astros is Frankie Tuesday is a guy I'm really following because the Astros need him to be a rotation mainstay in the 2020s to make up for their older guys who are going to leave in free agency. And I got the name wrong, but I got the concept right because that guy turned out to be Framber Valdez, who I had no idea when I wrote that in February 2018 who Framber Valdez was. Okay. Christian Javier has done something similar. So, you know, what I kind of hope is what we've seen in the 2020, which is I don't know who this guy is. I don't know where he came from. But all of a sudden, Chaz McCormick is making plays in the World Series and making bids to be player of the month. If Zach DiZinzo or Jacob Melton or, you know, whoever we drafted in the eighth round in July turns out to be as good as those guys, we're in great shape in 26 and 27. And that's kind of what the Astros have done. So Drew Gilbert's the most likely person to do that, but he could be Kyle Tucker. He could be Francis Martez, and he could be something in between.
I mean, Andy, we could stay in the same draft. He could be Forrest Whitley.
Right, which is another untouchable. And we brought him up yesterday. I think you did, Jim. Brought up Chaz McCormick. He was a guy who was drafted in a round that does not exist in the major league draft.
Right.
It's a waste of time, they decided.
Yeah, and that is the crapshoot that is the major league baseball draft and development. And as much crap as I've read over the last few days and really for years, and some of it is deserved just based on sheer numbers, and we've talked about it on the show about the Astros farm system and their rankings against other franchises, we have a very, very good track record of developing the few players we do have and getting them to the major leagues and making them solid contributors to the team.
And the front office has a good track record of evaluating that too.
Right.
Well, and that shouldn't
change.
Well, and I'll extrapolate that because I actually got some information. It was funny because this weekend I was hanging out and talking to Garrett. He's the voice of the Skeeters, and he was telling a friend of his who said that they had maybe two track men in spring training. He said, I had no idea how much the Astros get into this until I became part of the organization. They don't do anything without three cameras pointed at them and going. So yeah, the Astros development machine isn't just we stumbled into three guys that responded well. It's an actual thing that maybe you can't quantify, but really is, I think, to Andy's point, keeping the Astros relevant and makes a trade like Gilbert being gone worth less of a risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a team that, you know, Jeremy Peña was a fourth round draft pick and he was MVP of the LCS in the World Series. Yeah, it would have been great that year had they hit on their first round pick, who I think was Seth Beer. But boy, they're doing really well on that draft because their fourth round pick is, you know, it was ranked the 40th most valuable, most tradable contract, biggest trade value in baseball. So again, can they continue to do that? It's a big question for every team, and obviously an important question for the Astros. How to do it? I don't know. The TrackMan stuff is great, right? Other teams are catching up with that, and it would be helpful to figure out sort of the next thing, what that is. I don't know. I don't think any of us here know.
Andy?
No, I mean, in a perfect world, yes, you get to trade, I'll pick on somebody, Jake Myers and Corey Jolks, and get Justin Verlander back. The Mets are maybe inept, but not stupid. So there was a price to pay to get a Hall of Famer on your roster for a playoff run and then another year of control and potentially two. It is the cost of playing poker. And the Astros identified players that, you know, the Mets identified players that they wanted. The Astros identified that they could afford to give them up for what their immediate goals are. And the emphasis now is on the Jacob Meltons and the Colin Barbers of the world to see if they can pick up the slack. And, you know, we've got a whole host, 20 more picks that came in just last month, all of which are signed, by the way. And then a whole host of non-drafted free agents. And, you know, one of those is bound to make the majors just because that's how life works.
Well, and I watched Pedro Leon hit a ball completely out of the Las Vegas ballpark, like onto the street. So maybe we'll finally see something out of that signing. Brian, before I get to the other topic of the day, or I think the main topic of the episode, your thoughts on the Kendall Graveman trade. I didn't realize it was such a bad trade until I read Twitter immediately after that he's essentially Montero level, which I don't see that, but
he's not as good this year as he was in 2021.
Right.
I think the notable thing here is, you know, they gave up Corey Lee, who is someone whose value greatly diminished over the last really 365 days. And he projects to be a well below average hitter. Now, catchers take a long time, and it could take a while for him to develop into a quality player, and catchers have different skills that matter. So we'll see how much that matters. But again, Egan speaks to, it's pretty clear to me the front office made an evaluation at some point that Corey Lee isn't our future at catcher. And from the comments they've made in last week, it's pretty clear that's Yiner Diaz. And again, on that whole development thing and having good young people, hey, having a big hitting catcher, a young catcher, is a really useful asset for the Astros.
Andy, you want to, anything else on Kendall?
Like we talked about yesterday, he is a good addition as a seventh inning guy. He was not brought back to be the closer or share the closer role. However, I still don't hate it that we have six guys who have closed games as part of their normal role on a team in our bullpen. Graveman will be used in spots where hopefully he is the most effective, and it'll be a good trade. If not, it's not. But Corey Lee the Astros have made it pretty clear through their actions that Corey Lee was never going to be a significant member of this team.
Right.
And so next year you're going to see the reins turned over to Diaz and maybe Cesar Salazar as your backup, or let's get some anger energy on this. They might re-sign Martin Maldonado again.
As a backup. Well, you know,
they added one more advocate for him. So,
right.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I will tell you what, guys, I was frustrated on Monday night because the Astros had jumped out to a 7-2 lead. And I do believe that was the final. But unfortunately, Stanek was a little ineffective, and it meant that Presley had to come in and close a game that really he shouldn't have had to close. But fortunately, he got the night off last night. I was present in the room for Framber Valdez's no-hitter. I started to sense the no-hitter coming, I'll be honest, in the fourth inning. And it's because he had been heavy strikeout for the first three innings. I think he struck out six of the first nine. And then it became a five-pitch ground ball inning and a seven-pitch, two ground balls and a flyout inning. The place was electric. It was funny because I was sitting next to three people who clearly know baseball and they're from Corpus, and we were talking and we were in on every pitch. And then we were surrounded by really like young people that were simply there to meet up before they went out. Kind of like a Longhorn crowd where they were just simply there before they went out after the game. Yeah, that's right, Andy. I took a shot at my my tea sippers.
There was probably a concert out on Speedway afterwards, so it's fine.
Jim, important note here. You're going to need to learn to drink at the stadium if you want to join the SEC, this Big 12 stuff.
Hey, we've actually been one of the first teams you could sell beer at. It was at DKR. It's been almost a decade now. But anyway, to the point that I turned around in the ninth inning and I actually told them before it started, I'm going to need y'all to be quiet. And they actually thanked me later. But yeah, the no-hitter, it's the second MLB no-hitter I've been to. I was actually at the combined no-hitter in 2019 with the guy who liked puppies. Guys, did you were able to watch in just – at what point did you feel like this was going to be the no hitter? Andy, I'll start with you.
It was interesting. You know, part of the, you might not have been able to catch it from the stadium, but Framber didn't throw any changeups until the eighth inning. I think he threw like three the entire game. So there was very clearly a plan once he got through about, you know, the first two times through the order that I've got a chance. And if you listen to some of the stuff Framber said last night, Josh Miller said last night, Framber's been at this point probably three or four times this season,
yeah.
And something has usually derailed him, and it's usually, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent between Framber's ears is what derails him. Last night, he doubled down on the focus. Whether you want to call that the Justin Verlander effect, like lots of Twitter was doing last night, or the fact that he's just a human being continuing to mature in his role, there was just not a time where I was worried, honestly, except for the last little blooper to Pena in the ninth, because it was just a weird hit ball.
Weird hit ball. Yeah, totally, totally.
I could have fully seen that go under Jeremy Pena's glove for no fault of his own, just the way it was hit. But it was – he got better as the game went on, and he was really, really good the first three innings. Just got more efficient. Like you said, I think there was a six-pitch inning followed up by a five-pitch inning, and then – you know, it helped out by a depleted Indians roster, but that is still a very good offensive team.
Yeah,
that was facing. So it wasn't
right. Like, I think
somebody no hitting the A's or the Mariners.
Well, I can say like Andy was saying though, I think he was at 70 pitches when the ninth inning started, and I think it's also fair to mention too that not only did he throw a no hitter, but he faced the minimum because he did walk a guy, but that guy was erased in a double play. Brian, were you able to watch last night? I know that you've been kind of busy with stuff.
Yeah, no, my wife and I went to the Jason Isbell concert in New Brunswick. I'm apparently fulfilling my destiny as a guy who writes about baseball, which we all end up going to Jason Isbell. It's the one place I was worried there'd be a gang of baseball writers from the Bruce Springsteen faction that would be punches outside or start a gang fight. Didn't happen though. So the show was great. Awesome. I enjoyed it. He's, you know, again, my favorite current artist here, and just, you know, really enjoyed it. Got to the end. My wife had come from work, so in separate cars. I walked her to her car. I then walked to mine, and for the first time in 3 hours, got to take out my phone and went, holy shit.
So, Brian, it reminds me of Remember the movie Fever Pitch where he has like the great night with Drew Barrymore and he has the great sex and he realizes the Yankees had the Red Sox had the big comeback? Was it kind of like that moment, like the night is ruined?
So I won't say the night is ruined. I mean, but I will say this here. We're going on vacation down to the Mid-Atlantic, and Isbell's playing and at Wolf Trap in Virginia tonight. So if anyone wants to buy me a ticket to that in the hopes they throw another no-hitter,
I think it's pretty
clear. I'm willing to test it out. I'm willing to test that theory out.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that you need to just quit whatever you were planning on doing for the next 2 months and follow Jason Isbell's tour like a Grateful Dead guy.
Yeah, we'll get a GoFundMe going. We'll get you
a Volkswagen van again, and you could just travel the country following Isbell.
Let me assure you, as a middle-aged white guy in khaki shorts, I fit in as well as a guy in a tie-dye shirt following Isbell as a guy in a tie-dye shirt does following the Dead. So I was in my element last night.
I love that. That was great. Yeah, it was. It had everything you needed to, like some really good defensive plays. Altuve had one ground out that I think got stuck in his glove a little bit, and it was a much closer play than it should have been. But I was pretty impressed because we take a lot of beating as a fan base for not really understanding baseball. But when he walked out to the ninth, Minute Maid got nuts. And I think Minute Maid was quietly aware of what was happening. I did fuss at Andy at one point. I was like, you haven't messaged me all game. Do not talk to me while this no-hitter is going. I would have blamed you if it had.
I take the Brian McTaggart stance. I can't jinx a no-hitter.
It was funny because I was texting my daughter and wife, and I kept saying, Framber's pitching very well. And I just kept adding a very. And at one point, Jordan's like, I quit responding because I didn't want to jinx it. That's my kid right there.
He's been raised well.
Raised correctly. It's fun though, because Andy, obviously you and I have been talking baseball longer than we have with Brian, but Brian, we used to play the game of good Framber, bad Framber, and it used to be one of the two, and it's just kind of nice to say bad Framber gives up three runs these days.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one of the stories, I mentioned Framber earlier, is the guy who's taking the rotation into the 2020s, and Framber would have been my World Series MVP last year. And the improvement of Framber Valdez, both in terms of his control, he always had that, he always had that curveball that just moved more than anybody else. But when he first came up, he had no idea where it was going. And so he's improved in his skills, but he's also improved in his mental approach. And we talked about development, but Framber Valdez is an example of a lot of that development happening at the major league level. Credit goes to Brent Strom, but hey, didn't skip a beat at all when Strom left and Josh Miller took over. And again, speaks well to, again, the broad structure of player development, particular pitching development within the Astros organization. And of course, speaks really, really well of Framber Valdez himself, improving himself in lots of different ways to be a star level major league player and someone who's a real big contender to be the Cy Young Award winner this year.
I would add to that, beyond Strom, beyond Miller, beyond the Astros, the willingness to embrace a player's mental health and find him help for that. And Framber's given credit. I mean, I'm not telling secrets out of school. Framber's given all kinds of credit to talking to a therapist before last year and the changes that have been made.
We've been doing that for several years, I believe.
Yeah, but it's I'm a little bit more comforted, and maybe I shouldn't be saying this out loud, that the game against the Rangers was a little bit of bad luck and a lot of lost focus versus he's got some lingering injury that we're not talking about because that's what we were all kind of –
Yeah, he openly admitted last night he was not focused.
Yeah, and you can see how a good hitting roster and even a good pitcher without everybody being present mentally, what can happen. You can have that bad start, but those bad starts are so much fewer and farther in between when Framber takes the mound. He is still the undisputed ace of the staff, even with the newest addition coming back. And that's right and good in my world.
Yeah, it was just it was impressive. One of the things I loved from his post-game press conference is that he was actually very much aware. You know, the big story is I wasn't even aware it was happening. And no, he, I think to your point, Andy, he was aware, and the changeup thing was a strategy to help get him there. And I kind of like just being upfront about it. Cause I imagine if I was a pitcher, I would know exactly how many hits and runs, which is probably why I would be a very good.
Well, I hate to pile on, but I fully buy it. If Jeff Bagwell tells me, I wasn't aware there was a no hitter going on until somebody told me that, I buy. I don't buy most pitchers when they tell me that, you know, say that out loud after a no hitter. I think it's one of those, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes it loses, sometimes it rains.
Yeah. I'm just really glad to come up here and help the ball club.
I think it's one of those things you just say as a pitcher. Yeah. I like LaGrassa not having any desire to downplay his accomplishment. Nope. Knew what was going on. Had a plan to get there. Good Lord willing, it worked out.
Just want to help the ball club, Brian.
And now I celebrate.
And now,
I get to enjoy it. Romber's going to fully enjoy that. And
he probably went out and bought something with a lot of carrots in it this morning.
All I know is this is that it does seem like a lot of the season is starting to shape in a direction that we're going. And, you know, I want to get Brian's take on this question really quickly before we get out of here. But Rangers getting Scherzer, Astros getting Verlander. Who got the better deal? The better player, excuse me.
Verlander's been better this season than Scherzer. And so he seems to have fixed his early season issues quicker than Scherzer. And look, in general, I trust the Astros pitching coaches more than the Rangers pitching coaches right now. So, you know, I'd rather have Verlander than Scherzer.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I would, I guess maybe it's an unfair comparison, but it seemed like a lot of what the Rangers deals made were to address injuries that just had happened. You know, Andy and I pointed out that Eovaldi has a forearm strain, which we all know where that can end up. Brian, you had wanted to add to that?
Hey, they signed their own multi, so, you know.
Yeah. So
they got a light-hitting catcher who everyone loves to throw to. Again, Maldonado was apparently the market inefficiency of the AOS, they thought.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a U.S. – that wasn't even a U.S. cash deal. That was international cash considerations. So, I mean, they got it for pesos.
Well, Andy and I are going to be at the game again today. I can only assume that Javier is getting the start. It's still TBD, according to the Astros website. I can only assume it's Javier, and Javier's pretty adept at starting some no-hitters too. So maybe we'll get lucky and get to see at least a few more no-hit innings. We're going to let everybody wrap it up as per our tradition. But after today's game, I'm getting a plane. Mama, I'm coming home. Go Stros.
Hey, they're a half game back, and all they got to do is outplay the Rangers over the last 54 games. I like their chances. Go Stros.
54 games to go, half game to make up. It looks good for Houston. Go Stros.